Oh, here we go, boys.
Go.
Ooh, I love that sound. This is a good one.
Everywhere in the spring, like just every bush seems to have a couple drakes hanging out, like they're just walking around all over. It just wasn't like that this spring. There's still a lot of ducks around, but nothing like the ridiculousness, like check your bed sheets before bed for mallards type of stuff.
I'm still seeing a little bit of chasing going on with the one hand and two drake mallards thing is still going on.
I saw that happening 2 days ago, yeah. And then yesterday I saw like a nine bird rape squad.
Yeah, duck life isn't exactly harmonious. I also saw, where was I the other day? Oh, I think it was Mille Lacs. Was it Mille Lacs? Had to have been. I think it was Mille Lacs. And this mother, Goldeneye, was this pair of common mergansers got a little too close to her and her brood, and she was not having
a Goldeneye, huh?
Yeah,
That's really cool.
She chased them right out.
Holy shit.
I mean, it was like, what is all this, like up this little creek that was like dumping in? It's all this crazy commotion going on, and then I'm like, what is going on? The drake merg comes flying out, and then the hen comes flying out and still splashing around, and she kind of comes out of the creek, and yeah, just a hen Goldie with she had about 13 little golden eyelets.
Did you hear Delta Waterfowl came out with a video on their YouTube page a few days back talking about the pintail? I think it's called the pintail problem.
And I was going to bring that up to you as a possible subject.
You want to talk about it right now?
Good, if you know, yeah.
Well, like, let's start the podcast.
Let me just guess. Is this like why we don't see drakes in Minnesota?
No. That kind of a thing? Actually, okay. Kind of the exact opposite of that.
Oh, all right. Well, go then.
Well, are we going to make this the start of the podcast?
Yeah, that is it. Welcome, everybody, to Waterfall Wednesday.
Oh, jinx. Anyways, yeah, Delta Waterfall came out with a video. They said the pintail problem, and what they were saying was that the pintails choose very short grass nesting locations, which has resulted in a lot of wheat stubble nesting, because 20, 30 years ago, they used to plow everything after harvest, and now, because of soil conservation and the wheat stubble will grab the snow for moisture retention, that they're leaving the stubble fields up or even planting cover crops in there. So the hen pintails like to go in there and start a nest right in the middle of a damn wheat stubble field. And then spring starts up and the whole Farmer Joe fires up the John Deere and he's killing a bunch of hens, destroying a bunch of nests. So other ducks that nest in the similar area have been seeing, you know, their long-term averages go up, but the pintails have actually been seeing their numbers go down a little bit, and so they're getting one bird limits across all the flyways and that sort of stuff. And I mean, they're putting satellite trackers on hen pintails down on the Gulf Coast. They have been for a few years trying to figure this out more and more. So what Delta Waterfall has been researching is they also say there's too many drakes now. Like the drake ratio is way out of whack.
Really?
Because the tractors are killing these hens. And now you have, like, way more drakes than you would see with other duck species. And so they say that the spring chase, the chasing is actually killing some hens, too, because there's so many drakes rape-squatting these hens.
Oh, no.
And it is not uncommon for a hen to drown when she is encountered by a group of 8 or 9 of these brown thugs.
Dude, I've watched it. I watched it on the Mississippi River up by the Coon Rapids Dam. It was crazy with mallards, not with pintails. But, dude, it was nuts. I mean, there was so many drakes just kicking the shit out of this one hen. Yeah, they're pushing her under the water.
Yep.
And then she would fly, and then they would fly, and they're, like, picking feathers off her while they're flying. And then she would go back down, land on the water, and then they would just land, and they'd push her back down. And every single drake that flew up and down that river joined in.
Oh, exactly,
the
yeah.
As dude, long it was as, crazy.
When they're chasing, I mean, they can chase the hens to the point of death from exhaustion, too. And I mean, she's running and running and running. And it, like you said, more drakes will pick up the chase as others kind of fall out.
Oh, man.
So they can chase her till she dies. So they say this is happening a lot with the pintails. So what they're about to recommend to the Fish and Wildlife Service is that they move pintails into a mallard structure limit, meaning they want to increase the harvest on drake pintails. So they want to start doing, like, I think what they said is they want to do 3 pintail drakes and 1 hen for your limit. Mm. So the limit would be remaining at 1 hen pintail. And I think they said after November 1, they should start this in every state when the drake pintails are very easily identified, you know, because they got that bright white belly on them.
Right.
It's not tough to decipher a drake pintail from a hen pintail.
Right.
So they want to actually increase the harvest on drakes, get this ratio back so the hens aren't getting chased so bad. And then I don't know what they're going to do about the wheat stubble nesting problem, but that'd be sweet.
That's a farm. That's like a farm practice problem. Yeah, what do you do? I mean, that's, you got to,
man,
about all you could do is ask the farmers, like, hey, is there a different way you can do this, or leave a buffer zone? Like, if you have wheat stubble and you're going to plow it, plow the fringe or something.
I think they are doing some work like that with private landowners up in Canada. But God, that would be cool down in like me and Joe's hunts down in Oklahoma. There's been a couple of them now where we got into a pond situation that was just straight pintails, and I think it was a 2-bird limit that last time we did it, but we just had just a 14-man pile of pintails. It was awesome.
Dude.
But now imagine that with like a 3-bird drake limit. Oh,
that would be sick, dude. What a pile of sprigs.
Yeah, that'd just like awesome. 30 drake pintails.
And what do you guys go down there? What? So they have sprigs on them by then when you guys go down there, don't you? Yeah. Pretty much in the winter.
Yeah, they start their season somewhere around Thanksgiving, kind of like the rest of the southern states do. And then we're down there. We usually start like 2 days after Christmas, and we'll run for like 7 to 10 or 11 days usually.
Is that with coastal? Right, mm-hmm. I think Joe just put something on his Snap story about that.
Yeah, he did. Yeah,
they got a new lodge or something going on, or
well, they did last year too. Yeah, Larry built this big old lodge down in southwestern Oklahoma. It's 12 miles from the Red River, and it's sweet. Larry knows how to do his shit right. That's why me and Joe like to hunt with him so much. I mean, he's very professional and knowledgeable. He's been guiding in the Texas and Oklahoma region for 20 years at least, and you know. He's just a good commander of the ship. You know, he's got three or four groups in the lodge at any given moment, and he's got a big whiteboard there. This is the group. You know, this is what they want, ducks or geese. You know, here's some potential spots. Have we checked with those landowners? You know, we're not like putting fires out.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, he's just like everything's calm. Like he'll be taking naps in his chair there on lunch. You wake him up like, hey, we have this problem. Beep, bop, boop, gets his phone out. I think we've handled it, Nick. I'm like, all right, cool, man. Cool, Larry. Like, everything runs so smooth with Larry. And he's just a cool dude. And we get to hunt with Jason Kilgore down there. And everybody that we've hunted that has worked with Larry has just been super professional, super awesome.
Sounds like you need to go down there with the podcast equipment.
Dude, oh, that'd be a great guy to get on an interview is Larry. Larry, if you're listening to this. Let's hook up.
Set it up.
Yeah, I'd love to hear more.
Down there.
Yeah, because he's got stories on stories, man. You go in there in the lodge, and all these cool birds with cool bands on them. And, you know, he's been, you know, killing white geese down in the Texas Gulf area in the, you know, 80s, 90s. He's just got stories on stories on stories. So
that would be badass.
He really knows how to do it, right?
Yeah. So I was saying, so kind of like one of the other subjects you talked about, like the after the molt migration where birds kind of move north or follow the feed.
Sure.
It's like what I notice in Minnesota is that I rarely see people shoot drake pintails in Minnesota. And maybe by the time the actual push back south comes, they've just completely
and maybe that has something
relocated. Because obviously they're here in the spring because we're producing mallards or producing pintails, I mean, so can't do that without. I mean, I understand biology enough to know that it takes a drake and a hen to get that done. So,
and it could have something to do with what we talked about on an earlier podcast too, about how the drakes will have a different migration route and different nutritional needs than the hens with their broods.
Yes, so once they, you know, in the pintails, it sounds like they take off like shortly after doing the deed, like they don't hang around much.
Oh, really?
That's
I haven't heard that.
Kind of what I've been picking up. So.
What do you mean, like the drakes continue north, or
Yeah, like they get in and do the deeds. You know, I mean, kind of like what we're saying. You know how the Drake mallards, they kind of hang around because they'll, you know,
keep raping for a while.
They'll just keep raping. Mallards will keep producing, you know, a second, sometimes even a third clutch throughout the summer if they have enough time. Like they just,
they're, I haven't just heard that baby one.
They will. I mean, I've seen it with my own. I've had ducks on my own property. Like,
so you're saying she'll raise a brood,
and they'll get to a certain age where they don't need mom anymore.
No way.
And they'll rebrood.
I've heard of wood ducks doing this. Like, I've heard of wood ducks having broods down in the south after they've migrated.
Hmm.
And then coming back north and having another brood.
Okay, I never heard that, but...
And I think I just heard Scott Trinan talking about that. Really? Yeah, I don't know if I've ever read anything that said that, but he was saying it, like, on one of his, like, Q&A in between rounds at a goose calling contest.
Well, I know they'll definitely reclutch if they lose a clutch. I mean, that's for sure. But if definitely. if they have an early spring, they'll do it again. And I've actually shot some mallards that, like, in the fall that were like, how does this thing even flying? Like, I've so many pin feathers. You're like, this thing just hatched like
I've seen
a month
it too.
Ago.
Yeah, I've seen it too. It was actually on a youth waterfowl day when I was out by Fergus Falls, and I was a youth. And I remember watching a mother duck walk across the road with her brood, and they were like 2 weeks old, you know, like
yeah.
just out of fuzzball stage. I was like, holy shit, it's September
yeah.
14th. What
I'm like,
the
that
fuck?
One's never going to make it. Like,
so you suspect maybe that one is actually having a second brood?
That's probably a second brood, yeah.
And I have seen drakes give chase, like, into July, damn.
Yeah, man. I mean, I do a lot of fishing, so I'm on the water a lot. And I see, just like I said, into July, I'll see that chase going on. It's always, and it's not the super rapey ones that you kind of see in the spring with the eight to a dozen drakes going. It's always, it's the two. It's the two drakes and the one hen flying around.
Oh, really?
Is what I see.
Oh, all right.
For the most part.
I always wonder about those drakes that look like they're in a nice relationship with the hen, hanging out there all the time. They just turn into a rapist. Like, as soon as she lays her eggs, he's like, all right, cool. Got the wife all settled in. Now I'm going to just go rape for a few weeks.
Well, it's like you hear from a lot of the animal rights activists where they get on, you know, waterfowl hunters because some waterfowl, like swans and geese and some ducks, mate for life, they say.
Right.
Well, yes, but... They're not. It's not a very committed relationship because the hen's sitting on the eggs, or she's just making the nest or whatever, and the drake goes off to feed or whatever. If another single drake flies around, sees that hen, goes down there, she'll receive another drake. And
for ducks,
the other reason he's going off isn't just to get a bite to eat. He's looking for. He's doing the exact same thing that other drake was doing.
Hey, so, honey, I'm going out for a pack of smokes, maybe so, a little rape
at best. It's an open relationship. I mean, they might breed for life, but...
Can you guess, out of all the birds in the world, what percentage of them have penises?
Two percent
it's
only?
It's very, very rare for male birds, and that's including all birds, to have a penis.
So some males don't have a penis?
Most. 98% of all birds have no dick.
What?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
No, ducks and geese have dicks, and that's actually super, super rare in the bird world. And the reason that they hypothesize why this has happened is because of bird rape. That females have actually evolved, and the species have evolved to have no dicks.
Well, I do know that ducks have a...
They have a corkscrew dick.
Yeah, they have a corkscrew dick because the hens have developed like a labyrinth vagina.
They've developed an anti-rape.
Yeah, so
they've
it's
got
like
false cavities where the penis won't inseminate the eggs, and then the drakes have evolved to have countermeasures to
just
this
Cold War like just rape.
Yeah, spy versus spy.
Yeah, that's better. Not Cold War. Seriously, it's just like. An arms race of not getting pregnant and impregnating.
I heard that's on a Radiolab podcast.
Just wild, dude.
I think if you just Google Radiolab bird dicks.
Bird dicks. Well, that's weird, dude. That there's male birds out there that don't have dicks.
No, they just got like a hole. They just got like a hole, and the females have a hole, and they rub holes.
And they get the job done.
Yeah.
Or really.
Mm-hmm. And like the whole flamboyant color.
Dude, that's crazy.
The flamboyant coloration on drakes and of other bird species. The males have like flamboyant colors, and it's all and the elaborate like courtship displays they all have. It's all like kind of rape countermeasures, I think, because birds are just rapist motherfuckers, dude.
They kind of are.
Except for geese, for some reason. Geese seem to do that whole family unit. And they'll stick together remarkably well. Even, like, snow geese. You see these 50,000 bird flocks of snow geese. Like, inside that flock, it's pretty amazing how the families stick together.
Hmm. That's wild.
And I don't know how, but I mean, even like out in on the West Coast, when you get a lot of subspecies of Canadas in the same area, like when you get different subspecies in fields, they kind of hang out together. And I suspect they even kind of hang out together, like based on, you know, family units, geese that are in the same breeding area.
Well, I mean, geese aren't ornately, you know, feathered. They don't. They're not sexually dimorphic. They don't have the hen and a drake difference.
The males and the females look identical.
Yep. So there's no reason for the, you know, that like choosing a mate isn't based off of being flashy.
And I know that when the gander and the goose get separated in the wintering zone, they do still mate together. They just meet at the breeding site in the spring, and the goose will wait like 2 weeks, they say, for the gander to show up. And if he's not there,
I have needs.
yeah. She will pick a new mate.
I'm in my prime.
Like if he got killed and she didn't know about it or something, you know, a couple weeks goes by and she's still sitting there like building this nest.
Yeah, time. It's my biological clock is ticking.
Mm-hmm.
I need to get my needs met.
Another weird thing about ducks and geese when they nest is they don't ever carry materials to the nest site. They only build the nest from the surrounding materials. Like, yeah, pretty much like what you can reach with your head.
Yeah, I guess I can't say I've ever seen a duck or a goose carrying nesting materials, so that makes sense.
They don't.
They use their own down a lot.
They use their down, yeah.
Plunk their own down.
Just scrape together a nest. And
well, thank God for muskrats. I mean, that's what most goose nests seem to be on.
Yeah, and like diving ducks actually will nest on, they nest in open water. Like there has to be some depth of water underneath them for them to build a nest. So I guess like canvas backs and stuff, like I heard this all in like a Ducks Unlimited podcast recently, actually. It was like canvas backs, these big water ducks, they're just out on the Great Lakes, giant pools in the Mississippi River. They'll go up to Canada and they'll nest in a little half acre cattail swamp.
Hmm.
Because that's just what has flooded, and they do they do really well on it, apparently.
Well, it's like if you're on a bog, the bog never floods. It just keeps flowing. If the water level goes up, they go up. That seems to be a good survival strategy.
Yeah, and I guess they say that the entire nesting, not success, but the density of how many ducks are nesting in one location, they've done a lot of studies on like food availability, this, that, or the other thing, and they say it's based on one factor and one factor only, how much water there is.
Hmm.
And you get up north, like up into the Canadian prairies, like, it doesn't snow a fuckload up there. It's away from the ocean quite a ways. It's away from the Great Lakes. That's why these farmers are leaving the stubble. They're trying to collect as much snow as possible. And you get areas that are dry one year, wet another, and it can really vary on a year-to-year basis. Just like kind of like the prairies in the south.
Hmm. Interesting. Well, and certain... Well, golden... Wait, is it golden eyes? Yeah, I believe golden eyes are cavity nesters like wood ducks.
Are they?
Pretty sure.
I think you're right.
To double check me on that. Hooded mergansers are cavity nesters.
And they're parasitic nesters too.
Mergansers are?
Mm-hmm. Those hooded mergansers love to just dump some eggs in some wood duck boxes.
Really?
And bail.
Those dirty bastards.
Yeah, there was a picture that went viral like 2 or 3 years ago. There's a hen wood duck. She's got like 57 babies following her or some shit. They call her like super mom. It's like, yeah, super sucker. Like most of them are hooded merganser babies following her.
I'm trying to think of what the other cavity. There's another one I'm missing. It actually might be common mergansers. Because I remember reading it and going, holy shit, that's going to take. That needs to be a big ass cavity.
Yeah, those fuckers are huge.
Yeah, they're giant. I'd have to look that up.
We get quite a good.
Should Google that.
We get a pretty damn good common merganser migration through here in Fridley. Really? We wouldn't think of that to be coming through the Twin Cities, but yeah, some days I've been out there and There's been huge rafts of commons out on Moore Lake, and I've seen them flying over quite a bit. Huge white bellies on them too.
Yeah, they. You know what's weird in the fall? They kind of look. The drakes kind of look where the white. They almost looks yellow. You ever get one? It's like, but in the spring they're like powder white.
Right.
So I don't know if that is like the feathers haven't come in yet, or if that's like the feathers are stained from the waters that they're in or something.
Well, birds are kind of technically molting almost all year long. They just don't lose the flight feathers except for in the summer. But, I mean, obviously they're still molting because you'll see a drake in the early season and it looks like a hen. You know, you see one in late August or early September. A drake mallard, you can really only tell it's a drake by its yellow bill.
Wow.
You know what I mean?
So, yeah.
I mean, like, yep. I mean, by the time January comes around, that bird who was it had flight back in August, now it's got full coloration. It changed those feathers out in those that previous few months.
Yep. Common mergansers nest in holes in trees. They are a cavity nester, too.
What about golden eyes?
I'll look those up. I'm almost positive that those are cavity nesters.
We don't know shit about ducks.
I don't know nothing. Golden eyes nests. I'll put that in there. We'll see. That should work. They live in a dead tree.
Hey, what we were talking about, that conservation land and water whatever.
Yeah.
That passed, I think.
Sweet.
I think that moved its way.
Was that the one that opened up a bunch of refuge?
Nope.
For hunting?
Nope. This is going to be the one that does like $900 million a year in dedicated funding.
Ooh, that's a good one.
Yeah, and 25% of it has to go towards land acquisition.
Very nice.
So they're going to be buying land up like fucking crazy and then opening up to hunting.
That was sweet. I wonder if there's something that, going back to the nesting, trying to stay somewhat on topic before we close this one out. I wonder if there's something that we could do on like these WPAs where maybe they start planting, you know, wheat just to make habitat, or they could probably just mow the grass or maybe just leave it long. I guess I don't know what they prefer.
You know what? I've been doing a lot of research on like public land and like where you can hunt and all this. Minnesota, it really has a lot of great waterfowl production areas more out west, but wildlife management areas, which are state run, we have a fucking shitload of it.
Minnesota, in general, like public lands, it's ridiculous.
We do have pretty good, but where we really suck dick is our walk-in access, which would be private land ownership that's open to public hunting.
Like a plots or something.
A
like
plots, that, which is public land open to sportsmen. That's the North Dakota program. Mm-hmm. A lot of states like Kansas and others, they call it walk-in access, same as we do. Montana calls it block management land, but a lot of states have really good programs for that. Minnesota's fucking sucks. So I think with Minnesota, you have a lot of this WMA, the state-run land, where it's just this fucking shitty grass. And there's a shitty pond out in the middle of it, and you can go and hunt that shitty pond if you want. I'm sure it'd be good on some days, you know?
Right.
And I mean, like, you do hear good stories of all this land, people having great hunts on it. But why can't we come up with a program where we're, like, leasing some of this shithole grass that they're planting, native prairie grasses? Why don't we just, I'm sure Farmer Joe that has a farm right next to it would be interested in doing like a low cost lease on it. Plant some corn out there and make it available to us to hunt it. I mean, we could get some really good agricultural land to hunt if we started plowing up some of this garbage grass that does no value to... you wouldn't have to do all of it.
Water. No, you would definitely want a buffer. You wouldn't want it corn right down to that pond.
No. Just like, I mean, obviously without putting much thought into it, you know, right here. But I mean, like, there's big tracts of just open grassland.
Huge tracts of land.
And people just, you know, walk pheasant dogs through it, and that's cool.
Yeah.
But, I mean, there's got to be some way we could have more agricultural land for geese and stuff that would probably be really good.
I think you'd be better off leaving those lands wild and just trying to enroll more farmland into the walk-in access.
Yeah,
you'd be better off with that.
If you look at the walk-in access, it's pretty much centered in southwestern Minnesota. It's pretty much focused on pheasant land, which right. all the WMAs are already fucking pheasant land.
Yeah, right.
And
Nick doesn't like pheasants, apparently.
Yeah, fuck your dogs.
They're
in,
they technically are an invasive species.
Well, yeah, they're from China.
We
just like the coronaviruses.
China. China.
No, they... I love pheasant eating.
Oh, yeah.
God damn, do I love eating pheasants.
They taste good, but they're... I mean, they don't taste that good.
Yeah, they do.
They're all right.
What are you eating, game farm pheasants?
Ah, they just
taste get them like, garbage-ass just, birds from South Dakota?
They just taste like chickens, dude.
They taste like better chickens.
Yeah, South Dakota, that's a whole nother subject. The way they do their pheasants out there, they like stock. So they're basically like...
Stock, you like mean walleyes, farm.
Like walleyes are here. It's just, it's a put and take out there. They just dump in truckloads of pheasants out there.
I've just been bashing South Dakota on myself on my social media. Oh, have I been fucking South laying Dakota. Into them. They've got this whole thing where they're like...
But they're doing the three splash rule, or maybe had that passed? Are they still talking about it?
They're still talking about that, but that's still going to only be open to the people who do the lottery license.
Oh, sure.
But yeah. They're the only state that does a lottery license for waterfowl hunters, for non-resident waterfowl hunters.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they get all this federal money, and for habitat, they just got a few million bucks to open up more walk-in access for people to hunt. And it's like
if you get drawn.
But here's what they're saying. The lottery licenses don't sell out anymore, so anybody can
hunt. Oh, is that right?
Yeah, but they still limit the amount of days you can hunt.
Sure. Well, North Dakota's that. You only get your two...
Yeah, it's bullshit.
...5-day periods or whatever they are.
At least you can buy it over the counter.
Hmm. You think they would at least, like, you could buy another 2 weeks if you wanted. I mean, people that have deep enough pockets, they would just go again.
I have heard... It's either South or North Dakota. I think you can do that. And then, like, I just want to hunt out on those public fields they got in Pierre. They've got, like, 52 fields out there or something like that that are right off the refuge. So you can show up and you get a draw number and you can go out there. They've even got two trailers that you can drag out there if you don't even want to bring your trailer. Just use their decoys.
Huh.
Fully stocked with, like, sleeper shells and Bigfoots. And, just go out there and hunt public land. Except it's only open to residents. Because that zone, you can buy an over-the-counter license, but you must hunt private.
Interesting.
They don't allow you to go onto the public lands, which is...
We're going to end this on this note. I got some inside information on a new band hunting opportunity.
All right, let's discuss it publicly.
No. He'll never talk to me again. Let's just say I have an invite on a place where they know that they're banding. So,
like this year?
That they'll do it again this year. They've done it for the past few years, I guess.
But there's a lot getting canceled from coronavirus. I did.
I'll have to check them, see if you can.
I got an email from the Wisconsin Waterfowl Association because I'm a volunteer bander, and they said that all volunteer banding activities are canceled in Wisconsin this year. I didn't specify if it was all banding opportunities or all banding. Projects, but all volunteer-based ones.
Well, why don't they just combine a protest with the banding program? You can have up to 100 people then.
Can you?
That's what they say. You can only have like a backyard barbecue of 10 people, and then I think this is someplace in some county in California released their things. Like you can have family, friends barbecues up to 10 people, protest up to 100 people. And so this person in the comments was like, all right, y'all, we're planning the protest in my backyard. There's going to be beer and brats. We're going to be arguing about all sorts of shit tonight. Bring your own topic that you hate.
That's a good call. Why can't we, just get a couple of signs that say, like, we need more bands and we're protesting this goddamn banding halt that they're doing.
Greenhead Lives
That's
Matter.
That's a huge, huge hit, though, man. Like, Wisconsin's 4,000 goose bands a year. Minnesota's 4,000 goose bands a year.
Well, hopefully it's just a one-year blip in the thing. But
there'll be a lot less jingle jangles happening this year, man. A lot less people shooting bands, that's for sure.
All right, let's kill this one.
All right, that's it for that
Later, guys. This has been the Full Scale Outdoors Podcast, Waterfowl Wednesday with Nick J. Thanks, everybody, for joining. Hey, if you got some waterfowl lovers out there that you know and they are not aware of the Waterfowl Wednesday or Full Scale Outdoors Podcast, let them know. Share it with your buddies. Keep it going around. Don't forget, if you have a beard, if you're thinking about growing a beard, take care of that some bitch. Go to thebeardstruggle.com, put in code FULLSCALE15 at checkout. Save yourself 15%. Thank you again for listening. Whatever your passion, especially if it's waterfowl, pursue it full scale.